Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present part two of Jack London's The Law of Life in this week's American Stories. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Apple says dropping demand for iPhones in China will cause its overall revenue to fall well below previous predictions. Apple chief Tim Cook addressed the issue in a letter to company shareholders on Wednesday. Cook warned that the company's latest revenue guidance would be lowered to $84 billion. That was down from an earlier estimate of $89 to $93 billion. The news caused Apple stock to trade sharply lower. It also led to big drops overall in the U.S. stock market, as well as other financial markets around the world. The development was the latest sign of increasing economic concerns among Chinese buyers. The iPhone is Apple's biggest product. It made up about 60% of the company's revenue in the last quarter reported. But Apple's new $1,000 iPhones are a difficult sell to Chinese consumers worried about the economic future as trade tension continues between China and the United States. Apple's lower prediction added to concerns that the iPhone maker will keep losing ground in the important Chinese market. Experts say many Chinese consumers are likely to reject Apple's iPhone price increases and instead buy less costly models from competitors. Additional major American brands, including Ford Motor Company and Tiffany, have also recently suffered sharp sales drops in China. The country is still one of the world's fastest-growing economies. China reported a third-quarter economic growth of 6.5%, stronger than most other major economies. But that was the country's lowest rate of growth since the 2008 world economic crisis. Economic experts have blamed Chinese consumer concerns on the country's tariff dispute with the United States, as well as an increase in news about falling automobile and real estate sales in China. David Dollar is a China specialist at the Washington-based Brookings Institution. He described the change in how Chinese buyers see the future as definitely worrying. He added that overall, consumption growth is slowing down across China. The Associated Press reported his comments. Emily Lee is a 37-year-old advertising designer in Beijing. She told the AP she is delaying buying another car or making other major financial decisions right now. People are worried about losing jobs, she said. Weakness in Chinese demand is especially painful for Apple and other smartphone makers. China makes up 1/3 of the industry's shipments worldwide. Estimates from research company IDC showed smartphone shipments to China fell 10% from a year earlier in the quarter that ended in September. Apple's third quarter shipments in China fell 13% from a year earlier to 7.5 million, IDC reported. That put Apple's market share in fifth place in the Chinese market. Chinese smartphone manufacturer Huawei enjoys a 24.6% share. In his letter to Apple shareholders, Cook gave no China sales numbers for the final quarter of the year. But he said sales decreased as consumer uncertainty grew over the U.S.-China trade dispute. Worldwide, Apple fell behind Huawei to become the number three brand by number of handsets sold in the third quarter, IDC reported. South Korea's Samsung Electronics was in first place. I'm Brian Lin.
Chinese President Xi Jinping said Wednesday that independence for Taiwan is against history and that no political party can stop the path toward reunification. In a policy speech centered on Taiwan, Xi said, "We are willing to create a vast space for peaceful reunification, but we will never leave any room for any sort of Taiwan independence separatist activities." Taiwan's leader rejected Xi's call just hours later. President Tsai Ing-wen said her self-governing island of 23 million people would never accept the one country, two systems plan that China proposes. She said China must face the fact of the existence of Taiwan, Republic of China, and not deny the system of a democratic country that has been commonly built up by the Taiwanese people. Taiwan split from China in a civil war that brought the Communist Party to power in China in 1949. The opposing nationalists set up their own government on the island, about 160 kilometers off the Chinese mainland. Xi proposed talks between the two sides to work out a systematic arrangement for the peaceful development of the cross-strait relationship. Tsai said Taiwan is willing to talk, but it must be with the approval of the Taiwanese people. Tsai has gone against the wishes of the Communist Party by refusing to support the One Country, Two Systems plan. Xi said going against the One China principle will result in tension and turbulence. Xi also said that China has the right to use force, if necessary, to answer interference by outside forces, and what he called an extremely small number of Taiwanese separatists.
The director of a well-known art museum in Italy is urging Germany to return a Dutch painting stolen by Nazi troops during World War II. Eike Schmidt is director of Uffizi Gallery, a museum in the Italian city of Florence. He is making the issue known to the public by hanging a black and white image of the painting. The word stolen appears on the image in three languages. Schmidt said this week that the painting Vase of Flowers by Dutch artist Jan van Huysum is in the hands of a German family that has refused to return it, even after many appeals. Representatives for the family have demanded payment for its return to Italy. The Vase of Flowers painting is worth millions of dollars. It was first put on display in Florence in 1824 after Grand Duke Leopoldo II bought it for his art collection. Schmidt said the painting is already the inalienable property of the Italian state and thus cannot be bought. The oil painting hung as part of Leopoldo II's collection from 1824 until World War II. It was moved to a village for safety during the war, but Nazi troops stole it. It did not appear again until Germany reunified in 1991, when the offers to sell it back to Italy began. Schmidt, who is German, said issues like these are preventing the healing of wounds from the war. Germany should not apply the statute of limitations to works of art stolen during the war, he said, adding that the country must ensure those works are returned to their owners. He called it Germany's moral duty to return the artwork. I trust that the German government will do so at the earliest opportunity, he said. I'm Alice Bryant.
What do you get when you mix the sound of heavy metal rock music with Mexican mariachi music? The answer is metalachi. Metalachi's members call themselves the first and only heavy metal mariachi band. They mix the traditional mariachi sound from Mexico with modern heavy metal. The group performs songs like We're Not Gonna Take It by the band Twisted Sister and Rock and Roll All Night by Kiss in their one-of-a-kind style. I think we've transformed the music enough to say that we actually came up with our own genre, said Metalachi's trumpet player, who likes to be called El Cocuy. He spoke to the Reuters news agency at one of the band's recent shows in Los Angeles, California. He added, "There's some people that consider either mariachi music or metal music almost like a religion. But most of the time, people love what we do." The band's members keep their true identities secret. But all of them are from the Los Angeles area. They have been playing together for about 8 years. The five members of Metalachi are classically trained mariachi musicians. They play in a traditional mariachi setup, with a singer and four musical instruments, trumpet, violin, guitar, and guitarrón, or bass guitar. They do not have a drummer setting the beat, which is usually an important part of heavy metal music. Guitarist Paco Halen says the guitarrón and the guitar provide most of the sounds that a drum set would. The usual lead guitar parts and solos are provided by Kyla Vera, who plays the electric violin. She is the only woman in the band. She says, people who enjoy heavy metal have grown to like mariachi after seeing Metalachi perform. Everyone seems to have a really good time, she noted. Even if they weren't into one or other of the genres, most of the time this kind of bridges the gap for them. Metalachi is currently performing in the western United States. The group plans to perform on the high seas on two music cruises.
Modal verbs are helping verbs. We use them with main verbs to help us express ability, possibility, necessity, and permission. Today's question is about a modal that is commonly confused with an expression. Here's the question, which comes from a listener named Ja Fire.
Hi. Would you like to explain the difference between can and be able to? Thank you.
Hi, Jafar. I can explain the differences between the two. I just use can to talk about my ability to do something. We also use be able to for abilities, but usually only when can is not possible. I'll tell you what that means in a minute. But first, let's explore the word can. Can is a modal verb. We use it to talk about present or future ability or possibility.
I can play the guitar.
You can buy the tickets online.
You must use could for the past tense, such as in, you could have bought the tickets online. We also use can to ask for or give permission.
I am finished. Can I go now?
Yes, you can.
And to ask someone to do something.
Can you bring me the magazine?
Now, let's explore be able to. This expression is not a modal. It is the verb to be plus the adjective able. The word to shows that an infinitive verb will follow. We use be able to when it is not possible to use can for abilities, such as after other modal verbs.
I won't be able to take you to the train station. Sorry.
You should be able to finish the book in a few days.
The words won't, short for will not, and should are modals. In English, we do not put two modals together. So, we cannot put can after them. We also use be able to talk about small or large past successes.
We were able to get a great price on the television.
She was able to win the math competition last month.
But, in negative form, we can use be able to or could.
We couldn't get a great price on the television.
She wasn't able to win the math competition last month.
But note that the negatives wasn't able to and weren't able to are a little more formal than couldn't. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Alice Bryant.
The Law of Life by Jack London, Part 2.
Koshkush placed another stick on the fire and let his thoughts travel deeper into the past. There was the time of the great famine. He had lost his mother in that famine. In the summer, the usual plentiful catch of fish had failed, and the tribe looked forward to the winter and the coming of the caribou. Then the winter came, but with it there were no caribou. Never had the like been known, not even in the lives of the old men. The rabbits had not produced any young, and the dogs were skin and bone. And through the long darkness the children wept and died. So did the women and the old men. Not one in ten lived to meet the sun when it returned in the spring. That was a famine. But he had seen times of plenty, too, when the meat spoiled before it could be eaten. Even the dogs grew fat and were worth nothing from eating too much. In these times they let the animals and birds go unkilled, and the tents were filled with newly born children. Then it was that the men remembered old quarrels and crossed to the south and to the west to kill ancient enemies. He remembered when a boy, during a time of plenty, when he saw a moose pulled down by the wolves. Zingha lay with him in the snow and watched. Zingha was his friend, who later became the best of hunters. One day he fell through an air hole in the frozen Yukon River. They found him, a month later, frozen to the ice where he had attempted to climb out. Zingha and he had gone out that day to play at hunting in the manner of their fathers. Near a creek they discovered the fresh track of a moose, and with it the tracks of many wolves.
"An old one," Zingha said. "It is an old one who cannot travel as fast as the others. The wolves have separated him from his brothers, and they will never leave him."
And it was so. It was their way. By day and by night, never resting, biting at his heels, they would stay with him to the end. How Zingha and he had felt the desire to see blood! The finish would be a sight to remember. Eagerly they started up the trail. Even he, Kaskush, who was not a good tracker, could have followed it blind, it was so wide. They were not far behind the hunt, reading its awful story at every step. Now they saw where the moose had stopped to face his attackers. On every side the snow had been stamped heavily. In the middle, there were the deep footprints of the moose. All about, everywhere, were the lighter footmarks of the wolves. Some had moved to one side and rested while their brothers tried to seize the moose. The full-stretched impressions of their bodies in the snow were as perfect as though they'd been made a moment before. One wolf had been caught in a wild dash at the moose and had died under its heavy stamping. A few bones remained as witness. The two boys stopped again at a second stand. Here the great animal had fought with despair. As the snow indicated, he had been dragged down twice, and twice he shook off his enemies and gained his footing once more. He had finished his task long before, but nevertheless, life was dear to him. Zingha said it was a strange thing for a moose once down to struggle free again. But this one certainly had done so. The medicine man would see signs and wonders in this when they told him. Then they came to the place where the moose had tried to climb the river bank and go into the woods. But his enemies had attacked from behind, until he leaped high and then fell back upon them, crushing too deep into the snow. It was clear that the kill was near because the two dead wolves had been left untouched by their brothers. The trail was red with blood now, and the distance between the tracks of the great beast had become shorter and shorter. Then they heard the first sounds of the battle, the quick bark of the wolves which spoke of teeth-tearing flesh. On hands and knees, Zingha and Kashkush made their way through the snow. Together they pushed aside the low branches of a young pine tree and looked forth. It was the end that they saw. The picture, like all of youth's memories, was still strong with him. His eyes now watched the end acted again as clearly as in that earlier time. Kashkush was surprised at this, because in the days which followed he had done many great deeds. He had been the leader of men, and his name had become a curse in the mouths of his enemies. For a long time he recalled the days of his youth, until the fire grew cold and the frost bit deeper. He placed two sticks on the fire this time. Then he figured how much life was left by the amount of wood that remained in the pile. If Sitkamha had remembered her grandfather and gathered a larger armful, his hours would have been longer. It would have been easy, but she was always a selfish child. She had not honored her ancestors from the time the beaver, son of the son of Zingha, first looked at her. Ah, well, what did it matter? Had he not done the same in his own quick youth? For a while he listened to the silent forest. Perhaps the heart of his son might soften. Then he would return with the dogs to take his old father with the tribe to where the caribou ran thick and the fat hung heavy upon them. He strained his ears. There was not a sound to be heard. Nothing. He alone took breath in the middle of the great stillness. It was very lonely. Wait. What was that? His body suddenly felt cold. A familiar cry broke the silent air, and it was close to him. Then his darkened eyes again saw the old moose, the bloody sides, the torn legs, and the great branching horns fighting to the last. He saw the flashing forms of gray, the bright eyes, the dripping tongues, and the sharp teeth. And he saw the circle move closer until it became a dark point in the middle of the stamped snow. A cold nose pushed against his face, and at its touch his soul leaped back to the present. His hand shot into the fire and dragged out a burning stick. Overcome for the moment by his fear of man, the beast drew back, raising a call to his brothers. Greedily they answered, until a ring of gray was stretched around him. The old man listened to the steady breathing of this circle. He waved his flaming stick wildly, but the beasts refused to scatter. Now one moved slowly forward, dragging his legs behind. Now a second, now a third. But now, not one moved back from his flaming stick. Why should he so desire life, he asked, and dropped the burning stick into the snow. It made a slight noise, and then there was no more fire. The circle murmured uncertainly, but held its place. Again he saw the last stand of the old moose, and Kashkush dropped his head hopelessly on his knees. What did it matter? Was it not the law of life?
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.